Peter B. Collins News and Comment here on Wednesday, May 23rd.
Hello, NSA. I just called you to say I love you.
I love you
because you.
Because you.
Really listen.
In the alphabet soup that is Washington, D.C., it appears the FBI has grown jealous of the capabilities of the NSA. The National Security Administration was chartered to eavesdrop on everyone in the world except American citizens. And since 9/11, Bush broke the law to order the NSA to monitor American communications. And then that was partly legalized by the FISA Reform Act of 2008 that candidate Obama said he would vote against and then voted for. And since we have seen the expansion of domestic surveillance, and the FBI had its turf taken over. So now we learn that the FBI wants to get in on the game, and they have opened up the Domestic Communications Assistance Center. They're hiring, and we'll get to that in a moment in case you're a hacker who would like a cushy federal six-figure job. But the mandate of the DCAC, Domestic Communications Assistance Center, is broad, covering everything from trying to intercept and decode Skype conversations to building custom wiretap hardware, analyzing the gigabytes of data that a wireless provider or social network might turn over in response to a court order, and it's designed to serve as a kind of surveillance help desk for state, local, and federal police. I want to thank CNET, which mostly covers technology issues, and its reporter Declan McCullough, who is their chief political correspondent, for breaking this important story. And as CNET reported on May 4th, the FBI wants internet companies not to oppose their proposed law that would require social networks and providers of voice over IP, instant messaging, and web email to build in back doors for government surveillance. And the job announcement? Well, one position pays $136,000 a year for evaluating electronic surveillance solutions for emerging technologies. That means as new devices, new systems are developed, they want to stay on top of it and make sure that that friendly government backdoor is always there. The new center will also facilitate the sharing of technology among law enforcement agencies. Doesn't that make you feel safer? And CNET says it's important to point out that the new agency or new office will not be responsible for the actual execution of any electronic surveillance court orders and will not have any direct operational or investigative role in investigations. Yes, they'll just be managing the technical aspects of breaking the law and violating our Fourth Amendment rights. And this is a very interesting development. The FBI has been authorized by Congress a Justice Department funding request for the coming fiscal year, predicts that the DCAC will facilitate the sharing of solutions and know-how among federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies, and will be welcomed by telecommunications companies who prefer to standardize and centralize the Stasi or KGB electronic surveillance. Take your pick. It was announced a couple of days ago that the White House is now the central control point for unmanned aerial drones. These are the robotic airplanes that have been flying over war zones, and in a moment we'll get to their deployment over U.S. airspace. But White House Counterterror Chief John Brennan is now in charge, and this is a really important development because it blurs the line. It eradicates the division between the CIA, which had a different charter like the NSA did originally back in 1947-48. The CIA was not supposed to operate domestically, and they claim that they don't. But the CIA also was supposed to be an intelligence gathering and analysis agency, not a parallel division to the Pentagon. And we've had this game of musical chairs where Panetta moved from CIA to Pentagon, where Petraeus moved from a general into running the CIA. And now the White House says they will coordinate what targets will be hit by these unmanned aerial drones. And I guess Brennan has the choice of deploying an Air Force drone or a CIA drone. And what is the difference? What is the distinction? Are there different standards, different protocols? And who exactly gets to choose whether a target earns a drone strike or not? These announcements, starting with the May 1st declaration by John Brennan, that we actually have drones, which was a change in posture, it really raises more questions than we have answers to. And when we now see this concentrated at the White House, it gives me a very uncomfortable mission creep and expansion of executive authority type reactions. Now, the other issue of the day, reported by CBS News from Washington, is about the deployment of these unmanned aerial drones over the United States. Yesterday, I reported to you about the powerful article in The New Yorker by a writer named Nick Paumgarten, which details the state of the law and the state of technology related to these tiny drones, some of them the size of a bird, some of them the size of an amateur's radio-controlled miniature aircraft. Well, the discussion now, driven by the ACLU's objections, is that these domestically deployed drones working for law enforcement agencies may not only be equipped with cameras for surveillance, but also may contain weapons. And none of this has been really debated. The American public is largely in the dark about the development of this capability and its deployment in the United States, and one law enforcement agency is considering putting tasers on unmanned aerial drones. Now, I've got a lot of problems with tasers already in the fact that they can be fatal, and yet they're promoted as a non-lethal weapon for law enforcement. And again, these are issues that need to be thoroughly debated. The American people need to be aware of these plans to expand the use of aerial drones in the United States. And I think that we need a voice in whether these can include weapons. And at this point, it really seems to all being done as secretly as possible and with as little legal or legislative oversight as possible. And it concerns me greatly. One more item on drones. I guess this is a big drone day. The U.S. has announced that it will be allowing Iraq to acquire unmanned surveillance drones from the U.S. as part of efforts to boost bilateral relations and also to beef up security of oil installations and energy fuel exports in Iraq. The drones will help to protect the southern oil field near Basra, which has become vulnerable after the withdrawal of American troops. And Iraqi officials said on Monday, the Navy of Iraq has purchased U.S. drones to protect the country's oil platforms in the south. And where do we start to put limits on this? If we sell our drone technology to Iraq, will they share it with countries like Iran that we are opposed to? I don't call Iran an enemy. I know some people do. But certainly it is an adversary, and once we start to allow this technology to be placed in the hands of third parties, there's no getting those genies back in the proverbial bottle. Gareth Porter has become a very credible and valuable contributor to our podcast series here, and I want to direct you to truthout.org, where he has co-authored a new article with Shah Nuri, related to the March 11th massacre in Afghanistan. This has been pinned on a single individual, Robert Bales. And the week-long press reports about the event where they refused to identify Bales until he had been spirited out of Afghanistan, and he now resides at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, where he apparently is going to take the fall for these events. But there's much more to the story than the corporate media in this country has shared with us. The events of March 11th, where civilians were slaughtered in the middle of the night in their homes, 11 people, I believe, in total. What we're learning is that these events followed by a day or two, an improvised explosive device that was detonated, and that this threatened American troops, and that this led them to start to threaten Afghanis. And Porter and his co-author go into some detail that shows that the stories that have been fed to the American media about the timeline of those events, that Bales allegedly left his base twice to go on shooting sprees in the local community, and there are serious holes in the timeline and the story. And there are eyewitnesses to the events who say that, in particular, the second round of shootings involved much more than a single American soldier, and that there may have been as many as a dozen other U.S. soldiers on that particular patrol. And so what we're learning here is that the military has tried to deny that this was somehow a reaction or vengeance for the IED attack that had occurred just a couple of days ago. For example, on March 21st, a Pentagon spokesman said there was no evidence of any IED attack in the days prior to the massacre. But it occurred on March 8th in the village near Camp Balambe. And so this is a very clear challenge to the official narrative. Five eyewitnesses said in separate interviews with Truthout that a U.S. commander had blamed the local population for failing to report the IED. It turns out that in general, the Taliban does let the local people know where they have placed these their landmines or devices that can be exploded remotely. And, of course, the idea that the American occupiers believe that the local citizenry should trust them by turning in Taliban information like the location of IEDs is incredibly naive. And as I mentioned, on the alleged second outing, accounts by survivors of the killing of another civilian in Najiban in the early morning of March 11th suggest it was a military operation involving as many as 15 to 20 U.S. troops. So the idea that this was a lone gunman who was deranged doesn't appear to fit the eyewitness accounts. You can read about that at truthout.org. And again, I have great praise for the work of Gareth Porter, particularly on these issues. Well, the Catholic Church is continuing to operate in such a hypocritical manner. Out of Vatican City, there is a daily updated scandal about a group called the Legion of Christ, a religious order, and its late leader, its founder, the Reverend Marcial Maciel. He abused seminarians and fathered three children with two women. These are known facts. The American face of the Legion of Christ is the Reverend Thomas Williams. He admitted last week that he fathered a child several years ago, and he's taken a year off to contemplate his future. Now, these are embarrassing episodes for the Catholic Church. And I don't, as a former Catholic, I don't take any pleasure in seeing these individuals who have violated the faith that they claim with a God and whatever faith they have with congregants. And they operate in a way that places them above the morality that they impose on others. And that doesn't square with the activities recently of Catholic bishops here in the United States and the war on religion as they see it, is something that they're fighting very hard. Just this week, the U.S. Conference of Bishops has said it has no choice but to sue the federal government if Congress fails to rescind the rule that forces insurers to offer contraception coverage. And in 43 dioceses, we have bishops who are threatening to file lawsuits and claiming that they are victims of a policy that violates their religious precepts. Now, these are the same people who either are silent or are part of the cover-up of the serious pattern of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. And their response is not to address those serious issues in the church, but to turn to our government to try to force American Catholics to observe the rules about birth control that are flouted by more than 95% of American Catholics. And it is a very clear political initiative by the Catholic Church to roll back the clock, to defeat Barack Obama because he's a dangerous socialist liberal, and to really try to undo the freedom that secular Americans have to choose when they want to have a child and when they don't. And it starts with contraception, but it doesn't end there. It also involves abortion rights. And so this pushback from the Catholics is so infuriating because, number one, I think it's an inappropriate involvement in secular politics. I believe in the separation of church and state. I think that's a fundamental constitutional precept in this country. But Catholics can blow right past that and claim that their religious freedom is being violated. And as I've pointed out before, the Catholic rules on contraception are not proclaimed as issues that create a condition of sin. If you use a condom, if you use the pill, you're not required to go to confession and say, "Father, I sinned." And so it is a guideline. It is a recommendation. But it is not one of the fundamental moral teachings of the Catholic Church, and they're being dishonest. They are telling a big lie, and I guess they consider it to be heavenly deception. But a lie is a lie is a lie, even if it comes from a Catholic bishop. And finally today, I had no idea about gun running across the border with Canada. Yeah, criminal groups and terrorists north of the border are borrowing a page from the Mexican drug cartel playbook. They're buying weapons smuggled from the United States that are generally unavailable in Canada. Now, I haven't particularly been aware of major gang operations in Canada, but this story coming from Hearst Newspapers is a bit of an eye-opener. It says that Canadian law enforcement seized nearly 110,000 firearms over the past 4 years and fielded at least 439,000 gun trace requests from 2008 to 2011, said a spokeswoman for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Vancouver is ground zero for Canadian gun violence, much of it fueled by American weapons. In 2009, the city's police chief acknowledged a full-scale gang war in which 16 died in about 40 shooting incidents in a three-month period. And so I have to say, this is really the first notice I've taken of these issues, and I guess we're going to have to harden the border with Canada. Should we start building a fence? Should we deploy drones and the National Guard? I'll leave those questions for a future commentary. Thanks for joining me today. Be sure to drop by my website, peterbcollins.com, and subscribe so you can support our work. A bonus book could be yours.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.